Hey, welcome to the Bullpen Session. This is Patrick Lillis. Glad you're here. Glad you're listening. Hope everybody's doing well. Excited this week to share my conversation with director Jesse Hill. Jesse's someone I've known for, it's funny, I feel like 16 or 17 years, and really appreciate their work and their artistry, and someone I wanted to talk to because I think they've navigated a career. We talk at some point in the middle, very parallel to mine in the solo work that she does, directing and developing solo shows. But also, I was interested because they parallel, and you'll hear us talk about it, while navigating their freelance career, they are, you know, I met them as associate artistic director of Terra Nova, which was a theater company in New York that specialized in solo shows and development of new plays. And then I know that Jesse is part of Rattlestick, an off-Broadway theater company, and just like that she found herself part of institutions and invited in while also navigating their solo career, freelance career directing. So it's a really great conversation and happy about that. Also wanted to remind people who are listening, if you're on New York, this Saturday, December 16th, the Farm is offering an audition workshop with casting director and director Jen Haltman. And Jen is great and going to share just her experience and, you know, best practices for auditions and give feedback on your work. And anybody who's, you know, if you're actively auditioning, it's a great thing to do. But also if you're going to be auditioning for grad school coming up, good chance to try out the monologue. So I hope that you'll sign up. It's on, you can find the information on the website or social media anywhere, and it's there. But I'm looking forward to doing that Saturday. And as we're wrapping up the end of the year, I hope everybody is productive and getting the things done artistically they want to do and cleaning the slate. It's so funny, I say cleaning the slate, not that anything is ending, even though the calendar year is, but just getting ready for the goals of 2024. What do you want to get done? And I think one of the things that I find successful for getting things done is cleaning up what isn't done in 2023 so that I've done the rewrite if I'm working on a play or gotten that email out to the person I've been meaning to email for a while and, you know, making sure that my slate is clean so that I can, in a place to go after the new goals for the new year. But one of my goals for a while is to have the conversation with Jesse Hill. So I'm excited to share that with you. And with that, play ball.
It's called Flying Carpet Theater. And it's actually a 20-year-old company that's operated on a pretty small scale in New York and Atlanta. And the founder reached out to me last year when he got a job running a performing arts high school in Atlanta, Georgia. And I'd been devising and making a lot of solo shows and other projects with the company for several years. And he just said, you know, I don't want to close the doors. Do you want to run this for a little while and see if it's a good fit? So I'd been kind of actively avoiding artistic leadership for a long time and trying to make a freelance life work. And I just decided maybe this is coming at a time that can allow me on a low stakes level to try something out and see if it feels familiar and what's changed since I did it the last time. And so, yeah, I've been doing that since September of 2022.
Were you associate there?
Yeah, associate artistic director at Terra Nova Collective.
Was that what you said when you last were the artistic, when you were last leadership? Is that what you're speaking about?
No, I was speaking about
Chicago.
Chicago, the time I spent in Chicago as artistic director of Stage Left Theater Company. That's more similar to what I'm doing now because it's kind of all me. It's a pretty small operation in any given year, under $300,000 budget, usually hovering around $200,000. And, you know, it's enough for a modest salary and for me to contract people to come in and help me. But I'm lucky if I can get our co-production or something going on with work that we've developed once a year. So.
Did Flying Carpet help with Open?
Yes, flying carpet helped with the later stages of open when we wanted to do it in the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, and we had a really nice film of the New York City premiere. So flying carpet helped get, you know, with the marketing and the promotion of that, and helping get it out in a video format during, you know, our COVID shutdown time. And also, we co-produced a tour to Italy last November. We got a Mid-Atlantic Arts Foundation grant to take it to four venues in Italy last November 2022, and did that for a week. So the flying carpet got on board with that. The flying carpet is really kind of a visual metaphor for touring aspirations and bringing you know, bringing New York City original work to places across the globe, but more than that, underserved areas that don't really get exposure to theater as often as you would be exposed to it in New York City or Chicago, for example.
Yeah, nice. Actually, I'm gonna I did not know you were artistic directing at the moment from my bio research, but one of the reasons I was really interested, besides that I'm a fan and that your name came up a couple of times, I just talked to Lori Vega,
Oh yeah,
and
already.
said she had such a great time in West Virginia with you. But I've noticed that you're part of organizations often, like on the artistic team of Rattlestick. I think we were first introduced, like you mentioned, to Terra Nova, and I was curious how it is to find those homes and freelance, and what that does for you. And now, and it's interesting because you're still, I'm imagining, still freelancing, but solely responsible, as you said.
Well, you know, I made a commitment to myself when I moved to New York. It's now 16 years, going on 17, that I really was going to try to live a freelance lifestyle. It really felt like something that just worked for my brain and my spirit to be, you know, passionately invested in a project for a really concentrated period of time and give birth to it, if you will, and then move on to the next interest. And I think it's always kind of worked for my short attention span way of interacting in the world. And I really wanted to see if I could do it. And it's really been what I've discovered in just committing to, I'm going to make my living as a freelancer, just committing to that on its base level. It's really meant having some kind of a hook into an organization where you're either part-time or being contracted to do literary work or dramaturgical work, or be on a team of some kind that isn't necessarily the directing. That's really what I found at Terra Nova. I really got involved with them as someone who was re-envisioning their new play development programming, which I had a lot of practice with at Stage Left back in Chicago. That's all we did was make and produce new work. So I brought those skills to Rattlestick as a literary manager. That was a part-time position. So, you know, they have these positions at the organizations are kind of a way to have a voice in the programming, but not necessarily be carrying the mantle of artistic director, when really what you're doing, and I'm being reminded of this year, is fundraising and maintaining your connections with people who are continuing to believe in the work and finance the organization. And it's really, really all consuming. And so I found the associate artistic director and the literary manager and some of these other positions are more focused on just the artistic work. And so, and I get, you know, obviously enjoy that work a lot more than begging people for money. So,
Yeah.
I think that's what it's meant to me, is a little bit of a part-time stable income coupled with just being connected to the artistic work of the organization.
They feel like you get invited in. It's not a, I'm saying that about the Rattlestick, about Terra Nova, as opposed to an application. It's not like, I don't see necessarily that they're posting, we need an associate or we need this. And is that, Is that based on just being around and available and being in the community that they recognize
Yeah,
you for
well, I
that
mean, I'm
skill?
curious to ask you the same question, like when, like when I'm hanging out with all the Labyrinth people, like I wonder, like, how do you get involved in this big old family? And what I think I've discovered in my own trajectory here is that it's been about just being in the right place at the right time and having the connection. So, as an example, the first thing I did when I got here right out of grad school is apply for what was called a directing residency at Ensemble Studio Theater. I don't even know if they have them anymore.
Yeah, I don't know either.
But they took four directors every year, and essentially it boiled down to you having an administrative responsibility in the organization, and you got to direct a lot of readings and workshops, which was great. It was a great way to meet people. And I met the leaders of Terra Nova through that residency. And as I got to know them, and they got to know me, they realized the background that I had in new work development and that I had created new play development programming at Stage Left. And they were just happened to be in a place where they were going through a transition, Terra Nova, and they needed somebody to come in and brainstorm with them about how to make their new play development programming more effective for writers. And so that they paid me to come in and do it just because I happened to be in conversation with them at EST. And then I would say that the same thing with Women's Project Lab. I was in it in 2010 to 2012. And this is these labs and these directors groups are a great way to meet people. And I don't think I ever would have met Daniela Topol if I had not or gotten to know her as well as I did, had she not been our mentor for that 2 years. And so when she took over Rattlestick, I mean, she essentially just called me up and said, "Do you want to do this?" Because she knew my background. So I think that that's the general answer to the question is I just happened to know the people that were looking for the thing that they
Right.
needed, and I had it to offer.
It's nice. And the Women's Project, which I'm a huge fan of that theater company, and I think that their lab, but I think of it as it's one lab but three labs, writer, director, producer. And is it 2 or 3 years? So you said 2010 to 2012,
It's
feels
2 years.
two
Yeah, it
years.
was.
And just sounds, I mean, it's funny, the ESD one, I don't know if it still exists. I remember that it did exist, but I haven't heard of it in a while. And but the WP Theater is that value is not only because of the mentor, but you're right, you're in a room full like-minded, similar place people. I want to ask, what'd you get out of, why'd you do it? What motivated you to do it? But also what do you think, besides meeting Daniela, that home base, what does it give you?
To be really candid, I had never moved to New York City. I didn't know what I was doing. I had never tried to make a living as an artist without an institute, like a full-time institutional job underneath me. And, I went to my mentor in grad school at Yale, Liz Diamond, and I said, "I'm going to do this freelancing thing. What advice do you have to me? Like, just be real with me. What should I do?" And she said, "Just say yes to everything. Anytime anybody offers you anything, just do it. And if it's not right for you, you can let it go. But if the opportunity is there, just keep saying yes, because you have to keep putting yourself out there. It's a really crowded market. There's a lot of people trying to do the same thing. And, just do it." So as a result, I've directed, everything but projects that I can't stand that I'm pretending to love to pay the rent, and projects that I adore, and everything else in between. And so the Women's Project Lab was like that. When the application comes along, and I knew that Liz had done the lab, and that other alum from the school had done the lab and talked about it, I thought, what do I have to lose? It's a community of people that meet once every couple of weeks and talk about trying to do the same thing, trying to get their work out there and help each other out and get to know each other as artists. And maybe these are the people that hire you, a few years down the line. So what you really get out of it, I think, is community and relationship, it's relationship building towards, projects that might come down the line in the future. That's really what I got out of it. And when I think back on it, I have many, many relationships from that time, which is now almost 10 years, yeah, more than 10 years old, that I still have with playwrights and directors. Which is wonderful. It feels good, especially when you're in a profession like this that is stereotypically, but it's true. It can be very isolating when you're doing it by yourself as a freelancer.
Yeah, I think, it's funny. I think we have similar paths. And so I'm going to ask you questions that I'm like, when you said, oh, I could ask you too, I'm like, yeah, you could.
I could.
But I think that thing about developing work, it's like as a director trying to, because there's finding the project, the one you love, the one you're nurturing. And then how do you find that you take them to somebody elevating and saying, hey, I want to produce that beyond workshop? How does, what's your experience with taking, to having that happen or making that happen?
Well, it's only really been in recent years that I've started to direct in regional theater. And if I look at what all of those opportunities have in common, it was about being attached to the work, either being involved in its development for a really long period of the time and the playwright or the playwright performer saying, I need to work with Jesse, that I can't work with anyone else. And that artist really going to bat for me has really been how that's happened. So being attached to the work in some way, attached to the heart of the work, irreplaceable, as far as the writer is concerned. That has been the thing that's really propelled me forward. But and I know we have this in common. I've directed more solo work than I ever thought that I would direct. And I never even thought of a solo show before I moved to New York. I didn't even know I had all of the negative, ideas of what they are in my head, including it being like the first way to have therapy, free therapy. All of those tropes. And it was only because at Terra Nova, when James Carter left the associate artistic director job, and again, they just asked me to step into the position because I already was doing a lot of the work. The primary responsibility of that job was to curate the Solo Nova Arts Festival, which was an international arts festival, a solo festival that took applications from all over the world. So before I knew it, I was reading into the hundreds of applications and of solo performers in all different genres and meeting them and interfacing with them and learning how many of them are looking for directors, looking for dramaturgs, looking for guidance. And before I knew it, I was just surrounded by them. And it was a complete accident, just an accident of having that be a part of my job description. And I would say I've gotten to this place that I didn't intentionally want to get to at all, where I am regarded as a solo show specialist. And I'm like, what? Where did that come from? Okay. It really is a beautiful thing. And I know that the wonders of the solo show format and how special it can be too, but it was never something that I said, I'm going to go direct solo shows.
No, it's
It was
funny.
part of that say yes mentality, say yes to everything, try everything out, see if it fits, that kind of thing.
I love, yeah, as you described it, all of that resonated so much with me. I'm like, yeah, I never imagined it. And when you talk about dramaturgy, there's something and keeping it from therapy and really listening and mining the story and going, what is it that's unique that you and theatrical that you have to say? And I think it strengthens that muscle in a way that I never would have known before.
Absolutely agreed. Yes.
But yes, I never intended it. I also want to say, but it's interesting because as you end up working in a way organizationally and different thing, running the farm and stuff is, I also found the thing that's amazing about solo shows that I think I didn't think about before is the flexibility of schedule, because
Oh, yeah.
you're coordinating with one person primarily, and you're like, oh, your schedule and my schedule, we can be flexible, and which I love because it allows you to continue to do the other things you need to do and they need to do.
Yeah, it's really true. And it's a format where you can really imagine it for what the goals are, like for the intentions of the artist, and construct the final production around what those resources are, which I think you always hope that you can do in other situations. But so much of, I think to your point, so much of regional theater typical schedules are like a package deal that you fit the project into, as opposed to with a solo show, you can kind of craft the show around what it needs and what the artist needs.
It was actually hard for me initially going into regional theater for that reason, because you're like, oh, you're designing the set way ahead of time, and I'm like, what's the process like? And it wasn't took me longer than I want to admit to bring my full artistic self to figure out how do I match what they need and also bring my artistic process with me to it. Because it does feel like you got the October slot and this is what we're doing, and it's harder. I also liked what you said about the work. I think about being irreplaceable, or needed, because what tends to happen, right, when you the regional is the play gets picked. And as much as we'd like to think that we directors automatically are going with it, the playwright has to do that fight because the theater might want their person.
Yeah, and I've come to see, over years of specializing in new work and putting so much of my focus into making new things, that it's so rare that the playwrights are even getting an opportunity to get their work out there. And if an artistic director wants to, who's a director wants to snatch up their play because it's special, I just have learned to kind of take that as a compliment that I got it to that particular moment. And if they're getting the production, that's what you wanted, because so many of the other plays just sit around and never see the light of day. Whether they deserve, in quotes, to be produced or not. So it's taken me a while to see the win in that, but to expect the playwright to have to fight for something when they're for somebody when they're just so grateful to get the opportunity, and if they trust the other person, then it's their play. So that's kind of how I see it.
Right. And it's funny. And I remember hearing that early in my career. As you said, accepting it as the compliment of like, oh, right, I helped. And sometimes I help and I go on the journey. And sometimes it goes on a journey beyond. And you can't control any of that. When did Yale happen? Before Chicago or after Chicago?
After, so I went to undergrad and at University of Northern Colorado. I'm from Colorado, Denver, born and raised, and got a degree in directing, and just went in this really kind of comfortable caravan of people who were moving to Chicago. We all wanted to go, and were really had visited, and were excited about being in that theater community. It was really, 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 overall, in the grand scheme of things, really easy to get opportunity there. There was just more opportunity than there was people to do it, and I immediately found myself with a box office job and a house management job and painting scenery and working as a carpenter, and did all I had to do was just walk up to the theater and say I was available, and they grabbed me, So it was that kind of thing. And I got swept up in it. I got the artistic director job for at Stage Left 4 years into my time there. and spent, before I knew it, I was in Chicago for 8 years working. And I always had intended to go to graduate school. I always kind of had it in the back of my head because I wasn't very satisfied with my undergraduate directing training, which I could go into in another conversation. But and I also was starting to get a little worried about some resentment I was feeling about how much producing was taking over my brain and my life. It was a really, really difficult situation. I was running it during a stage left during 9/11, when 9/11 happened. And so there was a among all the other nightmares of that time, like a $40,000 to $50,000 fundraising shortfall. We lost a grant. It was just awful. And I think at the end of the day, what it did is it just woke me up to, okay, I think it's time for me to hand this over to somebody else and go back and start focusing on myself as an artist. So that was 8 years. I was out of school for 8 years before I went back. And was very targeted in where I wanted to go and had my ideas, you know, about what the best schools were, and chose to go to Yale. So yeah.
And they wisely chose you to go there too.
Yeah. Hopefully that's how they feel. No, it was a great experience. I wouldn't trade it for the world. What was kind of what when I look back on it, what was the most rewarding of it, I think, was getting really back in touch with myself as an actor, because I hadn't ever pursued it professionally, but I had always kind of felt as a director that there was an actor inside of me, like an actor in a director's body is what I tell people. And I really got so many opportunities to step back on stage, both in the classroom, they treated you as an actor in many classes, and on stage. And so when I left there, I felt really plugged into that part of myself, and I feel myself accessing it all the time, especially in the solo collaborations. How do you talk to an actor who's also writing the piece, and you know, the delicate balance of that? As an example, I had more acting aspirations than I ever really acknowledged when I was an undergrad, but very, very quickly got swept up into directing and got encouraged very much so by teachers to pursue it as well. I often wonder if I didn't get the encouragement that I got at that young age, what I would have actually done.
Yeah, I think it's also encouragement because people can recognize, like, oh, this is you're meant to do something, you know. I don't know what any of us would do if we didn't get encouragement.
I know. I think about that all the time with Flying Carpet when we're bringing these shows to kids who've never seen any theater before. If they never see theater, what if they're the most t potentially talented theater artist in the world, and we could be the ones that are lighting that, you know, that flame for them? Yeah, I think about that a lot.
I think that's great. It's funny, I'm teaching a class where I'm taking college students who aren't theater majors to plays. And three of them saw their first play ever when they,
Yeah.
and I think, I don't think, oh, they could be great theater artists, but I'm like, how could you live your life without it?
I know. Where are you teaching? I'm curious.
I teach it, I partner. It's three colleges from the South, Sewanee, Rhodes, and Centre College, and they
Oh,
send
cool.
students up to New York to do internships in their field. There's one theater major, but the rest of them, like somebody's interning at the UN and stuff, and they take two classes. One is the history of New York City with this very smart guy who wrote a textbook, and they do that Tuesdays, and he teaches them, and then Fridays takes them on tours. And then I teach them Monday theater, New York theater industry, talk about different institutions and different places. Then I take them on 8 Wednesdays to different plays.
Wow. Are you
And
the one selecting all the plays that they see? That's fun.
that's fun. And it's interesting because I try to get them to see different. It's been tough. We just started it. Very funny. It's a lot of talking of me in the moment, but it started right after the pandemic. And so some of the, of the eight shows, the original goal was like, oh, we'll do Broadway. We'll do some like theaters that this year was the first year we got to see a play at WP Theater because they weren't producing in the fall in the last 2 years. And Irish Rep. And then different off Broadway, and then try to get them to, like, we went to Theater for a New Audience last week in Brooklyn so they can see what's happening in another borough and try to diverse what institutions they go to.
Great.
And it's,
Did you see Waiting for Godot? I wish that I could see it. I've heard so many good things about it.
it's yeah, it's really good. It's really good. And I like, it's very funny. We saw it last Wednesday, and I'm now getting, they have to write a 2-page response. And I am now
Yes.
hearing, from my students who are not theater majors what they thought of the play. I've only read four of them, but I will just say that I'm not sure that existentialism hits the millennial crowd in the way that that it resonated with me.
Well, I'm a fan.
Me
I will
too.
see it. I'll see any production of that play.
Yeah, me too. And they're doing great. A friend of mine is in it, Ajay Naidu, and he's plays Bob
Yeah.
Dylan, and he's great. He's great. Say that
That's
in
great.
case I get to keep this into the pod. What did I want to? I did want to ask, like, it's one of my questions of like, how did you get to the next level? But I think what's interesting for me is I'd be interested in what you think the next level, any along the journey. Obviously, Yale builds community and it doesn't hurt, right? But it sounds, it may have been being a member of the Women's Theater, Women's Project Lab or something, but I don't know. What do you think brought you to the next level in your career where you started to feel like I have one. And from my outside view, you have one.
Well, thank you. I'm glad that you see that. I mean, I think I'm honestly in the process where I'm in the middle of defining what the next level is for me. I can say that no matter what it is, it's about me making all of the choices about what I'm going to engage myself artistically in, and not that there's going to be nothing in my life that, like, how I started my career, where I'm saying yes because I'm just trying to pay my rent. I think I'm on the precipice of having my life completely full of things that I want to be doing, art that I want to be making. And I think if I could sustain that even for a couple of years, where I'm just engaging in what I want to engage in, and that there's some traveling, which I love to do, that's associated with all of that, I would love that. I look around and I have colleagues, people that I went to school with. I'm so proud of them. They're running the theaters in this country. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to be running a giant institution right now. I don't think that it's where my interests are right now. I think my interests really are about doing what I wish that I had been able to do when I moved to New York, that so many other people that I know were able to do, which is to just focus on what kind of artist do I want to be. And I feel like I skipped that part because I was just trying to survive. And so I think that's the long way of saying the 100% choice making and my career, where I'm the one that's calling the shots 100% of the time. And I think I'm only to about like 80% right now, 75, 80%. So I'm looking for 100.
Well, it's very funny. 100's a good goal. 80% is pretty good.
Yeah. But as
That.
far as like comparing my, what I've learned is just like comparing myself to other people is just like a dead end, because I really do believe that we're all here, for different reasons and are on different paths. And It's just kind of wasted energy to be looking at something that someone else has and say, oh, I should want that, so I'm going to go for that. So that isn't my idea of next level. I think it's more intern it's more of an internal goal to
Yeah.
just enjoy the work that I'm doing as much of the time as I can.
And I'll ask a frustrating question. When you say 100% of the and becoming the artist that you are, how do you define that? What do you think is your artistry? What makes it feel like a Jesse project?
Well, I can tell you that it's very focused on the performances. It's not that I'm not interested in beautiful design and the, intricate design collaborations and all of that. But I think at the end of the day, when I look at my work, what I'm most proud of is really, really deeply engaging performances. I feel like the acting in my work is very good and very moving and very truthful. And I would like to think that everything that I put out prioritizes the actors and their art. So I think there's that. And then there's also like, am I learning something new? Can I work with people that I don't normally get an opportunity to work with? Is it forcing me to read a book, a few autobiography, an autobiography of someone, or do some research and just learn about a corner of the world or a life experience that I haven't considered before or haven't really tried to put myself in their shoes. Those projects are always very, very interesting to me if I'm in a learn in a ed if I'm educating myself. So those two elements come to mind. And I love, I what I don't like is putting myself in a box the way that people in New York and pe really can, when I think about projects that I've interviewed for and you get the question like, so what's your thing? Do you do Shakespeare? You just do new plays? Like, what do? Are you a deviser? And I always have people like insisting that, you need to be able to talk about yourself as being a specialist or, and I'm not saying everyone does it, but I'm saying that I've been on the receiving end of a lot of those questions over the years. And I'm just getting to the point where I can say, I can direct whatever I want to direct. I can direct an opera if I decide to direct an opera. I have the tools to do that. And if I feel moved to do it, I'm going to do it. And if I'm going to direct Shakespeare, I'm going to direct Shakespeare. At the end of the day, I really do think I want to be thought of as someone who is providing platform and for new voices and making new things. But I don't want to say that I'm never going to touch a classic or, have a new idea about something that's old or innovate that or, it I get I'm very resistant to being told that I can only do one thing. So that's always operating as well. Does that answer your question?
I don't remember the question. It answered a lot.
It's
I
like,
like it.
what is a
Which,
Jesse
yeah, what makes it a
work
Jesse
look like?
project? But I do think that question of like what excites you or gets you makes you think like if somebody were to see it, they might say that's what makes it a Jesse Hill production is like it gave a platform for great performances or it gave, like you were saying. I also liked your answer about if it made you read and learn, because I like to say that if I know how to do a play, I don't need to direct that play. You know.
I think that that's a really eloquent way of saying it. I absolutely agree. We're not getting rich doing this. So, there are other ways that I think I always feel like I have to be growing and changing and improving, to make it worth, staying in the game.
Yeah. I want to ask, when do you drama do you I know you develop plays and I know you dramaturg. Do you dramaturg when you're not directing?
No, I've never been like a staff dramaturg on anything. I always kind of think of myself as wearing both hats when I'm working on new material. Very often, working at New Dramatists would be a really good example of this. They provide playwrights so many resources to bring in whoever they want, and it's a great opportunity to meet dramaturgs there. I've worked with some incredible dramaturgs and love working with dramaturgs, but I would say that my brain really functions in that way. Like, I really can be very useful to playwrights, especially really early on in the when they're just incubating ideas, asking questions and helping them really flesh out what kind of story that they want to be telling. But no, I have never just thought of myself as a dramaturg.
Yeah, I ask because I do both, and I know you develop new plays, and I thought the only twice maybe have I dramaturged something that I wasn't directing, and it felt like I was operating with one arm.
Yeah, no, I've never done it. I've never done it, and I can imagine that that would be true.
Yeah, because there's something about getting inside the figuring out the machine of the play that also helps the dramaturgy. And now being in New York for this amount of time, and say, what do you think? Well, you talked about the saying yes, but what do you think you carry into the room now that maybe you didn't when you started?
Well, I mean, very, it took me a while to really feel like I was, deserving, really to be there. And I think, and I could talk about that in therapy, about all the people that tell me that I wasn't capable of doing things, and that I shouldn't be focusing in this profession at all, and nobody makes a living doing this, and you're crazy, and all this stuff that I think a lot of people experience as far as discouragement to go into this business. So I think I've been fighting against a lot of that for a lot of my life. But I think the longer that I'm here, the more I'm like, yes, I'm making this work. And it's only been me that's making this work. And so I think confidence and self-assuredness and all of those things are really the major difference between me now versus the person that showed up in New York in my U-Haul.
Yeah. And it's funny that confidence gets earned over time. I love that you said it's me doing this, because you have to realize after, I forget the number of years, it feels like 16, you said.
16, 17,
And, after that time, you realize, oh, right, I'm doing it. And it takes us, I don't think that's something that can be said the first 2 years, that we can be aware. But if one of the things I've become aware of as I get older that I wish I knew is that I'm going to be doing this for a long time. And by that, stop being in a hurry to get somewhere, but also you belong wherever you are in your journey. But it's interesting that I'm also surprised that you say it, because when I was, that's when I was interested about being your association with other organizations, is I thought, oh, that was a sign early on of people saying, not only do you belong, but we'd like you to belong with us. That's the outside perspective. And the inside perspective is, should I be doing this?
Yeah, especially, and I don't know if you experience this. I talk to students all the time about their worries about, I just had a student drop one of my classes at the beginning of the year, wrote me an email after the first two classes and said, I was really enjoying this class, looking forward to taking it. I really want to be a theater major, and my parents just won't let me do it. Sorry, they're making me drop your class. And I was just like, oh, I actually shed a tear or two because I totally empathize with that.
Yeah, and I want to say take the class, because you're going to learn how to think. And even if you don't pursue theater, you're going to problem solve, you're going to learn all the things that you're going to apply to any job.
That's really true.
And I think I've come more and more to the fact of like it's a valuable thing to study for that reason. And
Absolutely. It sounds like we're teaching a similar in the fall. I teach a class called Invitation to Theater, and it is a survey class that anybody can take for their fine arts requirement. And I have students, focused in a lot of different disciplines, and some of them are taking it just because they have to fulfill a requirement, and others really want to be theater majors, but they've talked themselves into something else. So, anyway, you get all kinds. But the class feels really important to teach because I do feel like I'm making like future theater connoisseurs, like basically future audiences that actually want to have theater in their life and go to the theater after, as a thing that they do for pleasure. So I feel like if I'm doing that, it's worthwhile.
it's worthwhile. And as you're talking about being an artistic director and fundraising,
Yes.
I feel like my job is like, yeah, you don't have to, for this one class, you don't have to become a theater artist, but I hope you recognize the value of theater and not only go, but support it.
Yes.
You
Yeah.
know, that's my subversive thing, is to get them
And
this.
realize that it only really exists because individuals support it in our country.
And so we need you.
Yeah.
What advice do you have to people who are starting out? Or maybe it's not even starting out, but what advice do you have for people who are thinking about having a career in this field?
There's a lot of things that I can think that I say broken record to people, in all different areas of where they ask for advice. The first one that pops into my head is I get a lot of what should I do? Should I do this? Should I do that? What's the right thing to do? Should I from directors in my directing classes, for example, what's the right thing to do? Should I spend a few years assisting? Should I write this person or that person? The questions are always about what is the right path? And I always end up coming back to asking them the questions of, well, where do you like to live? Do you like to live in the small, where do you like living in the city? No, actually, I don't like living in the city. Well, then why did you say, should I move to New York or should I move to Chicago? So, I mean, it's about, I think at the end of the day, I'm telling them what I wish I had done more for myself, which is to think more about what I wanted to be doing and less about what I thought I should be doing. And they're always surprised, or they're like, oh, I didn't even consider what I wanted. I'm just trying to figure out the right pathway to take through this maze. And there isn't a right path. There's only you doing the best you, the most authentic you can do in the situation, and keep checking in with that. Otherwise, you're not going to be very happy because you're just going to be chasing somebody else's pathway, which doesn't really lead you anywhere, I don't think, ultimately.
Yeah, you know, I want you to, it's interesting, right? Because you talked about that earlier too, about not comparing to other people, like they're doing this, that's what success is. It's very hard to understand that, I think, as a when you're beginning this path of journey, I think it's very hard to realize that you're an artist and what that means is creating work and putting it into the world in the way that you want to, and not the way that everyone else has done it before you. And it's really hard to think I could live not in Chicago or New York or Minneapolis or Atlanta, you know, or LA, you know, and still be fulfilled.
Yes. I recently had a conversation with this brilliant solo performer who was just loves living in small town in a small northeastern town, and is really feeling pressure to in order to move their career forward to come to New York, but they just are not ready to give up the small town. So they're trying to do whatever they can in their small town to fulfill themselves artistically and give themselves permission to come back and forth. But they're putting themselves first. I find it pretty inspiring to just say, like, to not let other people tell you what the right thing is. And our in this industry is riddled with that. I find what's the right path? What should I do? How do I get to the ideal next level? But they don't even know what the next level is. It's like waiting in line for a famous concert, but not even knowing who you're seeing when you get there. Just knowing that you're something's behind the door. I know it. I'm gonna wait in line like everyone else.
That's right. And when I get in, I'll be happy because
And
people
when I
tell
get
me
it,
I
I'll be
will.
happy. Yeah. I have had some wonderful mentors and teachers, but nobody really ever asked me that question. And I think it would have helped me a lot if, because we're all in this starvation mentality. Like, we got to survive, got to survive, got to survive. And so it feels kind of subversive to say, wait a minute, I'm willing to risk the discomfort of maybe not being able to pay my rent this month or going to have to get a job at a coffee house so that I can say, no, this isn't right for me as an artist. And, I wish I could go back and live that way of choice making, I think, which it just to see how different it would be, which is why I think I advise young people who are asking me for my advice, why I give them that advice. Because I could tell them to do what I did, but I feel like I'm just coming back around to, wanting to make the artistic choices more.
Thank you, Jesse. Thank you. It was a great conversation. And it's funny, as I was listening and we were talking throughout, I thought I talked a little more when I talked about the class and seeing Godot and all that. And I thought, well, part of the reason we talked a little more with each other is because we do have stuff in common of running institutions and freelance career. And it's just great to hear how they navigate that. And I also loved the advice at the end about, think about where do you want to go? What kind of life do you want to have? And I think early on, it's good to experience new things, maybe come to a new environment if possible, to work with people who are more experienced to you and more diverse work so that it can open you up to experiences maybe you didn't, haven't had before or weren't aware of. And so that you can make that decision of what do you want to do and where do you want to go. But ultimately, as I think we've discovered over this podcast many times, is there's not one path. And I love that Jesse really stressed that is like, what's the path you want? Is that job or opportunity or project or home base going to lead you towards the life you want? And it is a long life as an artist, and build the one you're aiming for. I thought it was really solid advice. I also like the fact of like could give you advice that's just rehashing what I'm doing. And I like, it's better to ask the person, what do they want? What are they aiming for? Where's your goal? And to keep that in mind, especially talk about with 2014 of 2024, oh my God, go back a decade, 2024, and thinking about new goals. It's like, are the goals, are the things, the projects you want to do going to get you to where you want to be? And it's really thoughtful. And I love the conversation with Jesse. I was really happy to have it. Thank you so much. And I love their work. Yeah. So with that, I hope everyone has a good holiday and look forward to talking to you in the new year. I don't think an episode drops between now and January 1st. So all the best in the new year. Also, the farm is having an end of the year fundraising campaign. Want to support to keep the podcast going, that's great. Or our audition workshop that's free, or any of the other programming that we do. And looking forward to new ways of programming in 2024. As I said before, I think there's a new way for early career artists to build a relationship with audiences, intimate relationship, and I'm looking forward to creating those in the new year. And with that, we're out.